My 5-year-old daughter Minnie is a chatty girl and likes to talk all day long. It took her about a year after being born to acquire the talent for language, and since then she has not wasted a single wakeful moment of her life remaining silent. Often her mother chides her to keep quiet, but I can never do that. Seeing the girl mute even for an instant seems so odd and unusual to me that I find it unbearable. That's why my conversation with Minnie is often feisty. One morning, as I had just started writing the 17th chapter of my novel, Minnie walked into the room and began, "Dad, our sentry Ram Dayal doesn't even know how to pronounce the word crow. He is so backward." Before I could begin to enlighten her on the differences between languages, she launched into another topic. "See, Dad, Bola was saying that when elephants lift water with their trunks and spray it from the sky, it rains. Dear, oh dear, Bola can speak such nonsense. He can rant all day and night without making any sense." Without waiting for my opinion on it, she asked me out of the blue, "Dad, who is mom to you?" "Sister-in-law," I thought to myself, but to Minnie I replied, avoiding the complicated question, "You go and play with Bola. I have some work now." At this, she flopped beside the writing table close to my feet and began to play a game of knick-knack with her hands and knees, rapidly chanting a nursery rhyme. In the 17th chapter of my novel, Pratap Singh was jumping off a high balcony of the jailhouse at this time with Kanchanamala into a river below in the dark of night. Stopping her game abruptly, Minnie ran to the window which overlooked the main road and began calling out at the top of her voice, "Kabuliwala, oh Kabuliwala." A tall, shabbily clothed Afghan street vendor with a turban on his head, a bag over his shoulder and a few boxes of dry grapes in his hands was passing through the street slowly. I had no idea what flashed through my daughter's mind at the sight of this man, but the moment she saw him, she began yelling. I thought this nuisance with the sack over his shoulder will show up in a moment and I won't be able to finish writing the 17th chapter of my novel. But the moment the Kabuliwala, at hearing Minnie's call, turned around with a smile and approached the house, she dashed inside and couldn't be found anywhere. She had this childish fear that if someone looked through the back of this Afghan man, several living children like herself would be found in there. Meanwhile, the Kabuliwala stepped into the compound and stood at the door with a smile and an Islamic salute. I thought, although the characters in my novel, Pratap Singh and Kanchanamala, were in dire straits, it would be unseemly to call the man all the way to the house and not buy anything. I bought a few items and soon I was involved in a rambling conversation with him on various topics, including Abdul Rahman, the Emir of Afghanistan, and the frontier policy of the Russians and the British. Finally, he was about to leave the house. He asked, "Sir, where is your little girl?" To break Minnie's unfounded fear, I called her from inside the house. She came and stood nervously pressing against my body and looked suspiciously at the Kabuliwala and his bag. The Kabuliwala took out some raisins and apricots from inside the bag and gave it to Minnie, but she refused to take them and remained pressed against my knees with a redoubled suspicion. That was how their first meeting ended. A few days later, as I was leaving the house in the morning for some important work, I saw my tiny daughter sitting on the bench next to the door and speaking non-stop with the Kabuliwala, who was parked next to her feet and listened to her with a grin and interjecting now and then in a broken Bengali to give her his opinion. In her short 5-year life, Minnie had never found a more intent listener before other than her father. I also noticed that she had a lot of nuts and raisins tied up her loose end of a small sari. Upon discovering this, I asked the Kabuliwala, "Why did you give all these to her? Please don't do it again." With that, I took out a half rupee coin and gave it to him. The Kabuliwala took the money without any hesitation and put it in his bag. On returning whom I found that a full-scale row had broken out over the coin. Holding the white, round, shining piece of metal in her hand, Minnie's mother asked her in a rebuking tone, "Where did you get the coin?" Minnie replied, "The Kabuliwala gave it to me." Her mother chided it. "Why did you take it from him?" Minnie answered sobbingly, "I didn't ask for it. He gave it on his own." Stepped in to rescue Minnie and took her out for a walk. I learned that this was not her second meeting with the Kabuliwala. He had been visiting Minnie almost daily, and by offering her pistachio nuts, he had already won a large part of the girl's childish heart. The two friends had a few stock phrases and jokes which were repeated in their conversations. For example, the moment when she saw Rahmat, my daughter would ask with a hearty laugh, "Kabuliwala, oh Kabuliwala, what is in your sack?" Adding an unnecessary nasal tone to the word, Rahmat would roar, "Handi." The essence of the joke was that the man had an elephant in his sack. Not that the joke was very witty, but it caused the two friends to double up in laughter, and the sight of the innocent joy between a little girl and a grown man on autumn mornings used to move me deeply. Another routine exchange between the two was whenever they met, Rahmat would tell the girl in his characteristic thick accent, "Missy, you should never go to the in-laws." Bengali girls were commonly familiar with the term in-laws practically since birth. But being modern, we chose not to load our daughter's mind with precocious thoughts at such tender age. That was why Minnie could never fully understand Rahmat's advice. But to keep quiet and not respond to a statement was contrary to Minnie's nature. Therefore, turning the phrase into a question, she would ask, "Will you go to your in-laws?" Making a huge fist with his hand, Rahmat would pretend to punch his imaginary in-law and say, "I'll well up my in-law." Thinking of the plight of the unknown creature called father-in-law, Minnie would explode into laughter. It was still early autumn, the time of the year when kings in ancient days used to go out on conquest. Personally, I have never been away from Kolkata, which is why my mind always wanders around the world. I am like an exile in my own house, as my mind constantly likes to travel to other places. The moment I hear the name of a foreign country, my mind longs to visit that unknown place. Likewise, the sight of an alien person brings to mind the image of a lonely hut beside a river in the midst of a forest, and I began to imagine an autonomous, exultant way of life. Yet, I am so dull and inert that every time I think of traveling out of my little world, I panic. That's why I used to mitigate my desire for traveling a little by talking to this man from Kabul in the morning. Sitting in front of my writing table in my own little room, the Kabuliwala blared out stories of his homeland in his broken Bengali, and I fancied it all before my eyes. Tall, rugged, impassable mountains on two sides, red hot with torrid heat, and a caravan moving through the narrow, dusty passageway in between. Turbaned traders and travelers passing by, some on camelback, others on foot, some carrying spears and others outdated flintstone guns. Minnie's mother is a naturally timid person. Whenever she hears a slight noise from the street, she thinks all the tipplers of the world are rushing together towards our house. After living for so many years in this world, though not many, she has still not been able to temper her fear that the world is full of all kinds of horrors. Thieves, robbers, drunkards, snakes, tigers, malaria, cockroaches and European soldiers. She was not free of the suspicion about Kabuliwala, Rahmat, and nagged me to keep a watchful eye on him. Whenever I sought to make a light of her suspicion, she asked me a few pointed questions. Are there no such instances of child abduction? Isn't slave trade still a practice in Afghanistan? Is it altogether impossible for a giant Afghan to kidnap a little child? I had to agree that these were not impossible, but were improbable. However, not everyone has the same capacity for trust, so my wife remained suspicious of the man,
But I could not stop Rahmat from visiting the house, either because he had done nothing wrong. Every year in January or February, Rahmat would go back to his home country to visit his family. A moneylender, he was unusually busy during this period collecting the dues from his clients before the trip. He had to rush from house to raise the collectibles, and yet he found time to visit Mini. It appeared as if the two were involved in a mischievous plot. The day he couldn't come in the morning, he came in the evening. To see a huge Afghan sitting in the corner of the house in the dark of evening in his baggy clothes and customary sack would create a sudden fear in my mind. But the moment I saw Mini rushing out of the house and greeting her friend, Kabuliwala, oh Kabuliwala, and the chums of incompatible years engaging in their familiar bantering and innocent laughter would fill my heart with delight. One morning, I was sitting in my room and reading some proofs. It was the end of winter, but for the last few days before the season came to a close, the temperature was freezing and almost unbearable. I was enjoying the warmth of a strip of the morning sun that had alighted on my feet under the table traveling through the glass window. It was about 8 o'clock and most of the early risers had finished their morning walk with the neck wrapped in scarves and returned home. Just then I heard some commotion in the street. Looking out, I found Rahmat in handcuffs, escorted by two policemen, with a whole host of street urchins trailing after him. There were two marks of blood on Rahmat's clothes and a policeman was carrying a blood-stained knife. I stepped out and accosted the policeman, demanding to know what was going on. Putting together the details from Rahmat as well as the policeman, I understood that one of our neighbors was indebted to Rahmat for a Rampuri shawl, and when the man denied his debt, an argument broke out between them. In the heat of the argument, Rahmat took out a knife and stabbed the man. Rahmat was in the midst of a hurling abuse in obscene language at the dishonest man when Mini came running out of the house shouting, "Kabuliwala, oh Kabuliwala." In a flash, Rahmat's face was filled with expressions of happiness. Since he didn't have the sling bag over his shoulder that day, their usual exchange on the subject could not take place. So Mini asked him straight off, "Will you be going to your in-law's house?" "That's exactly where I'm going," Rahmat replied with a laugh. When he noticed that Mini did not find the answer quite amusing, he pointed to his aunts and added in a heavily accented patchy Bengali, "I would have beaten up the in-law, but what can I do? My hands are tied up." Charged with grievous injury, Rahmat was sent to jail for several years. We almost forgot about him, living our days through our daily routines in the security of our home. It never occurred to us once how this free-spirited man from the mountains was spending his years within the secluded walls of the jail. And the way Minnie's inconstant little heart behaved was embarrassing even to her father. She easily forgot her old friend and found a new one in Nabi the Saiz. Then, as she continued to grow up, she replaced all her elderly male friends one after another with girls of her own age. She was hardly to be seen in her father's studio. In a way, I had almost ended all friendship with her. Several years passed. It was autumn again. Mini's wedding match had been fixed. She was to get married during the Puja holidays. This event would take the joy out of our household to her in-law's house, leaving us in the darkness. It was a sunny, resplendent morning. The rain-washed sun of early autumn took the hue of pure gold. Its brilliance made even the dingy, run-down brick houses in the inner lanes of Kolkata look beautiful. The wedding music had started playing in the house since dawn. Each note of the music seemed to come right from my rib cage in a sobbing tune and spread the sorrow of an impending farewell to the world, mixing itself with the radiant shafts of the autumnal sun. My Mini was to get married that day. There was a lot of hubbub in the house, since visitors were continually loitering in and out. A tent was being put up on bamboo poles in the courtyard of the house, and chimes of chandeliers being rigged in the portico of every room filled the air. There was no end to the rumpus. I was going through the wedding accounts in my study when suddenly Rahmat walked into the room and stood before me with a salaam. At first, I couldn't recognize him. He didn't have the customary sack with him, or the long hair, or his burly look. Finally, I recognized him through his smile. I asked him, "Hello, Rahmat, how long have you been back?" "I was released from the jail last evening," he replied. The words gave me a sudden jolt. I had never seen a homicide before. So my heart flinched at the sight of the man. I wished he would leave the house immediately on this auspicious day. I said, We have a wedding in the house today. I am quite busy. It is better for you to go now." At that, he began to leave the house, but as he reached the door, he turned back in hesitation and asked in a faltering tone, "Can't I see the girl for a moment?" Perhaps he was convinced that Minnie was still the same little girl and would come out of the house running to greet him, "Kabuliwala, oh Kabuliwala," as in the past. Their happy, playful relationship of old had remained unchanged. Remembering their past friendship, he had even brought a box of grapes and few raisins wrapped in a packet, which he must have borrowed from some Afghan friend because his own customary sack was not there with him. I said once again, "There is a festivity in the house today. It won't be possible to see anyone at this moment." He looked a little hurt by this statement and stood stupefied for a moment, gazing at me with a fixed look. Then he walked out of the room abruptly with a simple bye. I felt remorseful and thought I should call him back, but right then I saw him turning around. Standing close to me, he said, "I brought these grapes and raisins for the little girl. Hope you don't mind giving it to her." I took the fruits from him and was about to pay him some money when he grabbed me by the hand and said, "You're a generous man, sir. I'll never forget your kindness, but please don't pay me for these fruits. Just as you have a daughter, I too have one back home. It is remembering her face that I bring these gifts for your child. I don't come here for business." With that, he shoved his hat inside his huge baggy shirt and brought out a grimy piece of paper from somewhere close to his chest. Unfolding it carefully, he laid down the paper open on the table. I could see the impression of a very small hand on it. Not a photograph, not a painting, but the trace of a tiny hand created with burnt charcoal daubed on the palm. Every year, Rahmat came to peddle merchandise on the streets of Kolkata carrying the memorabilia of his daughter in his pocket. As if the soft touch of the little hand kept his huge lonely heart fed with love and happiness. My eyes filled with tears at the sight of that piece of paper. It no longer mattered to me that he was an ordinary food peddler from Kabul and I belonged to an aristocratic Bengali family. In a moment, I realized that we were both just the same. He was a father, so was I. The print of his mountain-dwelling daughter's hand reminded me of my own Minnie. I sent word for her to come out to the study immediately. Many of the women objected, but I paid no heed. In her bridal dress and the ceremonial makeup, Minnie came out of her inner quarters and stood beside me coyly. The Kabuliwala saw Minnie and became confused. Their good-natured humor of old didn't work out. In the end, with a smile, he asked, "Girl, are you going to your in-law's house?" Minnie now understood what in-law meant. She couldn't answer the way she did in the past. Rather, hearing the question from Rahmat, her face became purple in shame and abruptly turned around and left. This brought back memories of their first meeting and I felt an ache in my heart. Soon after Minnie left, Rahmat slouched on the door with a long, deep sigh. It became obvious to him that his own daughter had grown up as well and he would have to get to know her all over again. She would not be the same girl he had left behind. He was not even sure what might have happened to her in the past 8 years. The wedding music continued to play softly in the courtyard on the autumnal sunny morning. And sitting there on the floor of my house in an alley in Kolkata, Rahmat continued to envision the images of the arid hilly terrains of Afghanistan. I took out some money and gave it to him. "You go back to your daughter in Afghanistan, Rahmat, and may the happiness of your union bring blessings for my Minnie too," I said. I had to cut one or two items from the eclat of festivities for gifting that money. For example, the lighting decoration was not as gorgeous as I had wanted it to be, and the band party had to be cancelled. This upset the women, but buoyed by the benevolent spirit, my auspicious ceremony had become more luminous.